This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
Welcome to Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoffman. Sleep is the cornerstone to good health. Lack of sleep can make us moody, low energy, more prone to catching a cold or flu, and can increase those high-carb food cravings, leading to weight gain. More than 1 in 4 women experience insomnia or the inability to fall or stay asleep. Today, I'm speaking with double-certified holistic sleep coach, Morgan Adams, who helps women reclaim their rest and their health by leading them to the land of better, bountiful sleep. And now, some tips on how to get a better night's sleep.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Welcome, Morgan, to Lunch with a Healer.
Thank you for having me, Susan.
My pleasure. So you're an accredited health coach with 2 advanced certifications in sleep science, and I'm curious as to why you became a sleep coach.
Yeah, great question. Well, my sleep story, I guess, began in my mid-30s when I had a personal crisis, which propelled me into a bout of insomnia. And I was one of those people, you probably have folks listening right now who are in this situation, where I would lie in bed for 2 or 3 hours waiting for sleep to happen, and it never came. And it ended up being very frustrating. So I went to my doctor and was given a prescription for a sleeping pill called Ambien. I'm sure everyone has heard of it. Mm-hmm. And I took it for 8 years because it actually helped me get to sleep a little bit more quickly. The problem was I had a lot of side effects the next day. I was very groggy, hard for me to focus. It started creating problems for me at work because I couldn't work fast enough in the environment where I was in my department. And I had some eating episodes late at night, and I didn't recall, the next morning there were like empty wrappers. I'm like, where'd this come from? Yeah. So it was just a real struggle with the side effects. And about 8 years into taking the meds, I met my current husband. And when we were in our early stages of dating, he sort of had a come to Jesus talk with me. And he said, listen, it's really freaking me out because you become sort of like a zombie after you take that pill to go to sleep. And I was thinking, you are right. Something has got to change here because these pills were no longer serving me in the way that I was hoping they would. So I did what a lot of people do, and I don't recommend this. It is just, I cut the pills up by myself and basically tapered down. In retrospect, knowing what I know now about these Z drugs and sleeping pills is you really need the guidance of your prescribing provider to help you come up with a solution to get off of them. And I think it's also important to have somebody in your corner, like a sleep coach, to help you stay accountable and to support you, because it's not an easy thing to do to get off these pills. I was able to get off the pills, fortunately, and I slept pretty decently for many years after that. And then there was a plot twist. The plot twist was March of 2020. And right in the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of people's sleep started to suffer because nobody knew what was going on. Yeah. And I got worried about my sleep again. And I vowed I'm not going to go back to those days of insomnia or sleeping pills. So I just started getting online and, Googling sleep tips, and eventually I was able to get myself back on track with the sleep. And I started just organically sharing some of my sleep tips on social media. And I came to find out that a lot of people in my own circle were struggling with sleep as well. Mm-hmm. And late in 2020, I had a massive revelation hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, I need to become a sleep coach for women, because I was so passionate about the value of good sleep, what I had learned, and I wanted to actually help other women with their health in that capacity. So that was the sort of long and bumpy road to me becoming a sleep coach for women.
What was your job before you became a health coach?
I had multiple jobs over the years. I started off in social work, went to pharmaceutical sales, so I knew drugs very well. Right. Then I went to healthcare, PR, and marketing. That's pretty much, you know, the last like real job I had before I started on my own as an entrepreneur.
I am curious because you talked about getting off the Ambien. I know they're highly addictive, sleeping pills. I know people who have taken them for 20 years. What kind of side effects would you have had?
Well, I think it's more of a psychological dependence than a physiological dependence.
Okay.
What I find is that, you know, when I and quite a few of my clients actually are on sleep meds or they're on Benadryl or something like that.
Right.
And they're using these things because they lack sleep confidence.
Right.
So I think really key in getting off these sleeping pills is having somebody helping you gain that sleep confidence, because so many times people like I'll use myself. I used to think, well, I can't manage a night without it. Like I'd start to panic.
Right.
So it's just, you get yourself into this vicious cycle where you just keep taking them and you don't believe in yourself and not like believe in your own ability to sleep enough to stop taking them. So, that's why I just always, you know, advise people not to do this by themselves and to get a professional involved.
Okay. All right. Let's dive into the sleep issues. Yeah. So what are the physical ramifications of chronically deprived sleep?
Yeah. Well, if you look at sleep deprivation from a short-term perspective, like after a few days of not sleeping well, the first things you're going to notice really are a decline in your mood. You're going to become more irritable, cranky, reactive. Your impulse control will likely not be as strong. You'll probably have problems concentrating, remembering things. And then over time, if you are chronically sleep deprived, you know, by weeks or months, years, then you start looking into the more like, you know, physical manifestations that are more severe, you know, things like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease. So we really want to try to educate people that when they are going through a short phase of sleep deprivation is to not let it go on for very long. I'm kind of talking to two different audiences because there are people out there who willingly sleep deprive themselves, right? They are, and I've worked with these people too. They are working until 2 a.m.
right,
on their jobs because they want to, or they feel the need to. And they need just a lot of handholding and being like somebody to hold them accountable to like having a bedtime routine. And then there's another segment of people altogether. And those are the people who have insomnia. The people who have insomnia are not always sleep deprived because quite often they are able to get enough sleep, but they're spending way too long in bed to get that, you know, 7 or 8 hours. But some of these folks are sleep deprived. And we really need to make sure that we're, you know, holding their hand and helping them get the help that they need. Because my experience is that a lot of people do not feel comfortable sharing that they have insomnia. They're embarrassed about it. So, you know, podcasts like this help bring up the conversation, bring up the topic, and just the need for people to seek out help if they are struggling. Because if you can catch acute insomnia, you can really hopefully prevent the chronic insomnia. It's kind of like, you know, just kind of like you want to floss your teeth to prevent a cavity. It's that kind of thing. You want to just nip it in the bud as early as you can. So if you are noticing that you are having problems sleeping for more than a couple of months, don't let it slide. You start addressing it.
Agree. And there's a third group beyond the workaholics who feel to get ahead, they have to, you know, work till 2 a.m. There's people who just go on YouTube until 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Instagram.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a whole other group. This is by choice.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And there's kind of a term for that, interestingly enough. It's often called revenge bedtime procrastination.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a fairly recent term. And it's basically when people find, so this is sort of the prototype of that person. I'll just say it's usually like, in my experience with my clients, it's like a busy mom, you know, high powered, you know, really just on the go all day long. They spend their whole day doing things for other people, whether their kids, their spouse, their job. They make no time for themselves during the day. And so, because at the end of the day, they're just like, damn, I didn't do anything for myself. Like, I didn't watch what I wanted to watch. I didn't read what I wanted to read. They will just kind of almost rebel against their bedtime and be like, I'm going to stay up and watch what I want to watch because I didn't get to have any fun today. For people like that, it's just, it's extremely common. And what I really try to recommend for those folks is schedule like 10 minute breaks to build in joy in your day, you know, 10 minutes, you know, maybe three times a day. I mean, everyone can carve that out, go outside for a walk, you know, take a break and, you know, read or do something for yourself. Because I think if you take that time for yourself in the day, you're going to be less likely to engage in that revenge bedtime procrastination type of behavior.
Agree. And I don't know if this is true, but I find that women seem to be more vulnerable to having sleep issues or insomnia. It's almost like a camaraderie that women have with one another. Like, oh, I don't sleep. Oh, I don't sleep. Why is that?
Yeah, you're right on with that. So statistically speaking, women have two times more likelihood to have insomnia over their lifetime between adolescence through menopause. And as far as women, like recently they did a poll saying that women were 1.5 times more likely than men to report never or rarely feeling rested when they wake up. So we do have a history as women of sleeping not as well as men. And there are three main reasons why this is. So the first reason is kind of obvious, but it's hormones, fluctuating hormones between adolescence up through menopause. Mm-hmm. The second reason is because of mood disorders. Women are more prone to getting anxiety and depression. And there is a lot of overlay between anxiety, depression, and insomnia. And then the third reason why women seem to be struggling more with sleep is because of societal roles, especially in midlife is what I'm finding. So like a woman who's maybe 50, 52, she could be at the height of her career. She could be, you know, dealing with children at home. Maybe she still has teenagers who are, you know, out at all hours of the night. And she could also be dealing with aging parents.
Right.
So she's got a whole lot of demands on her shoulders. And sometimes I call this the sandwich generation. They're just dealing with it from all angles. So when you think about women like that, they've just got a lot more stress filling their bucket every day.
Right. So. And then as women go into menopause and beyond, it's all that plus the hormones you mentioned, plus. I mean, yes. There's such disruption in the female body at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's looking at about like 50% of women in menopause are having, you know, really difficulty sleeping.
Yeah. So what's the age group that you are coaching?
So I work with all ages of women. I've worked with women 27 up through 70, but I would say the bulk of the women I serve are between 45 and 55.
Yeah.
That seems to be the bulk of the women, the perimenopausal woman, right, all the way through postmenopausal.
Yeah. You've already given us the signs and symptoms that we should look out for. I am curious, how much sleep would you suggest is ideal?
Yeah. Well, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine recommends 7 to 9 for adults, 18 to 65. Now, one thing to consider is that our sleep needs vary by individual. So what I'm finding a lot in the media, because I do a lot of, you know, searching about sleep and I get a lot of these articles sent to me, is that there's this myth of that everyone needs 8 hours of sleep. And when that myth is perpetuated long enough, a lot of people start believing they need 8 hours and they start to really freak out if they're not getting 8 hours. So I just want to share with your listeners that it's okay if you're not getting 8 hours. You may not need 8 hours personally. I kind of look at the sleep hours as sort of like our calorie requirements. Like you and I are not necessarily going to have the same calorie requirements for various reasons, nor should we have the same sleep requirements. So I would say 7 to 8 is pretty good. Over 9 sometimes points to maybe some health issues. There are people out there who are okay with maybe 6.5. I think you're really kind of getting on shaky ground when you're going below 6, though. There are very few people who can function adequately on below 6, and they would be called short sleepers. That's the technical word for those folks. And they're a genetic anomaly, really. Yeah. The people who say, oh, I can get by on 4 hours of sleep. There's no way. There's just no way long-term you're going to be able to be productive and healthy on 4 hours, night after night.
Yeah, I agree. It catches up to you. I mean, that's when your body is, your cells are repairing, there's regeneration. There's so much that goes on during sleep that people physiologically aren't aware of. Yeah. All right. So how about some tips, 5 tips for women to help improve their sleep?
Yeah. So the first tip I would give is getting morning sunlight every morning as soon as you wake up. Or, you know, if you wake up at 5, obviously you might have to wait a couple hours to get outside. But that morning sunlight is so very critical because it helps reset our circadian rhythm. When you see the sunlight without sunglasses, so a lot of times people will think, oh, I need to take my sunglasses. Do not take your sunglasses outside, because your light really needs to hit your retina. Because when that happens, there is a signal sent to your suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is your circadian pacemaker. And that sends off a cascade of hormones that help you stay regulated all day with your hormones. So it helps boost your serotonin, which later converts to melatonin, helps shut down your melatonin in the early morning to make you feel less groggy. So that morning sunlight is a really, really critical piece of getting good sleep. And you only need maybe 10 minutes or so in the morning. So just, you know, I would recommend that as a regular practice. Second thing I would add relates back to mornings, and that is having a very consistent wake-up time every morning. Again, another thing that strengthens your circadian rhythm. A lot of times people will sleep in on the weekends, and they'll sleep like 3 hours, like longer than they would on a weekday. And they're basically giving themselves social jet lag, which is basically jet lag without the benefit of having traveled. So when I'm working with my clients who want to sleep in a little bit on the weekend, you do have a little bit of leeway. You do have about up to an hour of sleeping in on the weekend before you start to kind of mess up your circadian rhythm again. So that regularity is really key. Another tip I would have is to wait until you are sleepy to go to bed. So a lot of times what I'll hear from people, and this applies to a lot of folks with insomnia, is that because they're having such hard time sleeping, they're like, I'm going to go to bed early tonight. I'm going to get in bed at 9 and I'm going to go to sleep. Okay. So 9 o'clock rolls around and they're not even sleepy yet. They might be physically exhausted. They might be mentally exhausted, but they're not actually exhibiting the cues of sleepiness, like yawning and their eyes starting to droop. So what you end up risking then is if you get into bed when you're not sleepy, is you could end up tossing and turning and giving yourself unnecessary anxiety. So I would just say, you know, wait until you feel those sleepy cues to get into bed. And kind of circling back to the morning regularity of the wake up, if you're waking up at the same time every morning, the chances are that you are going to become sleepy around the same time each night, probably by like within an hour range. So that regularity is just so important. I would say another tip would be to establish a really consistent morning and evening routine. And again, the morning routine, we go back to that sunlight. Movement is great. Having some period of intentionality with meditation or breath work or, you know, journaling or scripture or something like that. And then in the evening, really prioritizing about an hour, if you can carve it out, of wind down time. What I see a lot of people do is jump from like shutting down their laptop to like going to bed. And it's just not a good way to get yourself to sleep, because your body and brain, they need that time to kind of just wind down and decompress. Sleep is not an on and off switch like that.
So with that evening routine, how long between shutting down the technology or even watching TV would you suggest?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say technology and the way of like devices, like cell phones and tablets, I would say shut those down within an hour of going to bed. TV is a little bit of a different issue. And I will tell you, people are shocked when they hear that I use TV as my part of my wind down routine. I literally will watch TV until I feel sleepy. And then I will go down into my bedroom and go to sleep. You have to be careful with TV. And I'll share with you and your listeners how you can actually watch TV without it wrecking your sleep. Number one, you want to watch it on an actual TV, like a real TV, and have your eyes fairly far from the TV. So you wouldn't want to basically hold your laptop up and watch something. Second thing, you would want to choose content that was not stimulating. So choosing like really light things. My husband and I actually like to watch shows on food.
Okay.
It's like totally non-stimulating. It's just kind of entertaining. You're like, look at this food they're making, or look at these restaurants, but you're not like, oh my gosh, you're not riveted or stressed out by watching these things. And then the third thing I would say when you're watching TV at night is making sure that your lights are dim in your house. So dimming the lights, turning them off. And just for extra precaution, I like to wear blue light blocking glasses at night. I have a pair that are like red lenses.
Okay.
And they block out like all the blue light. And actually I find myself getting kind of sleepy after I put them on. So there's a little bit of, mixed evidence showing like how well blue light blocking glasses work according to each person, because not everyone is going to be totally responsive, but I personally am. And I think it's kind of a good safety measure you can apply. That's not a huge intervention.
I have a question on that. Yeah. So if that's the case, then couldn't you theoretically have a TV in the bedroom that you're watching from a distance with the lights off, a very innocuous? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people say do not have a TV in the bedroom.
Yeah. And I would actually say not to have a TV in the bedroom. So our TV is in our living room. So having a TV apart from your bedroom, what they did a study on recently is they showed that women who were watching TV in bed at night, actually over time, they showed weight gain, and they ruled out all different all different variables. And they hypothesized that it was the actual watching TV at night that was causing them to gain weight insidiously over a period of time. This was like actually a breast cancer study. So they were looking at all different things. And so basically light and your sleeping environment can regulate or to the detriment, some of your hormones,
right?
Your metabolic function. So for that reason, I would say, probably just not have a TV in your bedroom. Now, if you're in a situation where your spouse or your partner wants to watch TV in the bedroom and you can't really come to they're not like willing to let the TV go, is have a timer set on your TV so that it goes off at a certain time. That way you're not exposed to that light as you're sleeping.
What about cell phones? Do you recommend keeping them in the bedroom, like to charge in the bedroom beside you?
No, I definitely recommend that your cell phone be in another room charging. So maybe like if you have a bathroom off to your bedroom, charge it in there or put it in a closet. There are a few reasons why. One is that if you, I just saw a friend do an Instagram story about this. It blew me away. She had an EMF reader going around, and a phone that was charged by her bed just blew up the EMF reader. So you don't want EMFs right next to your head while you're sleeping all night. Yeah. You just don't want those. Yeah. Another reason is because people have a temptation naturally to want to grab their phone when they wake up in the middle of the night to try to just kind of get them back to sleep. Yeah. And it ends up having the opposite effect because of the blue light right in your face. And then you might be on social media or the news and you just might get overstimulated. So I definitely recommend putting your phone to bed in another bedroom.
What about people who I'm one of these I meditate through and something on my phone, and actually it puts me to sleep, and then I eventually wake up and then put the phone by my bed, which I know is really a bad thing. So what do you do about that?
Well, you know, that's a tricky one because sometimes people really want that. They need that meditation to go to bed. There are different things on the market, though, that you could use instead of that. For example, there's something called a Hatch alarm that is a nice, like, kind of sunrise sunset. I mean, it's like a sunrise simulator alarm clock. So you're woken up in a very gentle way. This particular product, and I have no affiliation to it, but they also have like meditations and soundscapes and things like that. Okay. So, and there's something called the Muse headband. So there's different things out there that actually can give you that benefit of meditation without being hooked to your phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are all great. But what about exercise? Do you have any suggestions about exercise that's related to good sleep habits?
Yeah. Well, we know just from research that moving your body with exercise every day is beneficial for your sleep because it mainly just builds up your sleep drive. So I think there's varying studies that give information about timing. You know, a lot of the studies show that exercising in the morning is more productive for sleep. And especially like if you can work out in the sunlight in the early morning, that's you're kind of like feeding two birds with one scone. Mm-hmm. And I would say really just as far as like timing wise, to avoid exercising like 3 hours before bed, because your body really needs a chance to cool down before you go to sleep. Your body, your core temperature needs to cool down by like 1 to 2 degrees. So if you're doing something like really intense, like a spinning class or jogging a few hours before bed, you might not have adequate time for your body to cool down.
Agree. What about supplements? Magnesium, melatonin?
Yeah, that's a huge topic. Well, I am a big fan of magnesium.
Me too.
I recommend that everyone take magnesium, whether or not they have sleeping issues or not. It's just, it hits on, you know, 200 or 300 different systems. Mm-hmm. So you really can't go wrong with magnesium, especially magnesium glycinate if you're struggling with sleep. Melatonin is an interesting one. It's very, very popular, but there isn't a lot of substantial data showing that it's like super helpful for sleep issues or insomnia. It's mainly effective for jet lag or circadian rhythm disorder. If you do want to experiment with a melatonin though for sleep, I would suggest that you really shop around for a brand that is vetted for consistency and quality. Yeah. They did a study years ago where they pulled various melatonin supplements off the shelf in a grocery store, and they found wild variances between what was actually in the pill and what was advertised on the bottle.
Yeah.
So just, you know, really vet your products, your supplements very, very carefully. And a lot of the melatonin supplements come in like 3 to 5 milligrams.
Yes.
Which can often be too much for some people. At higher doses, they could potentially make you groggy. So again, shopping with like a more reputable brand, you might be able to get like a microdose of it, like maybe 0.5 milligram, or even liquid melatonin with droppers. You can control the dose a lot better. I mean, melatonin is, I don't think, you know, a dangerous thing at all. In fact, I mean, it's been used for cancer treatments, and it's a powerful hormone that can be used for many things. I think people need to go into it with sleep with realistic expectations. It's not going to like knock them out or make them fall asleep a lot faster. I think it may, in a study they showed, it maybe made people fall asleep like 7 minutes faster, and mm-hmm. maybe they got 8 minutes more of sleep, which isn't really anything to write home about.
Right. What about alcohol consumption in the evening?
Yeah, I definitely would recommend some strategies for alcohol. If you want to have alcohol, I would recommend thinking more in terms of like a happy hour versus a nightcap. So think, you know, 5 o'clock,
right?
Instead of 7 or 8.
Right.
You really need several hours for that alcohol to metabolize. Also, you know, cutting yourself off after like 2 drinks, because nothing good ever happens after 2 drinks of alcohol, especially as we get older and our livers just don't process it as well.
Exactly.
You know, alcohol is just, it's the world's most commonly used sleep aid, mm-hmm. for good reason. It makes people sedated. They're more likely to fall asleep quickly. And that's great. However, the rest of their night doesn't go as well. What ends up happening is it suppresses your REM in the beginning part of the night. And then at the very end of the night, you have something called REM rebound effect, where you get more REM in the latter part of the night, but you get all these wake-ups, right. Wake-ups oftentimes with sort of like a start, like you're kind of like in your like heart's racing, or you might have to go pee.
Right.
And your sleep quality just goes down. And I've done multiple experiments on myself with this whole alcohol thing using my Oura ring, my sleep tracker ring. And I find that if I have like one glass of wine at 5 o'clock, my sleep scores are negligibly impacted.
Okay.
But if I were to go out to dinner, for example, and if I had 2 glasses of wine at dinner, 7 o'clock, my sleep is wrecked.
Yeah.
So if you're going to drink, you just need to alter your pattern and your timing, I think.
Right. Yeah. It's all very interesting. Can we eat for better sleep?
To an extent, you can. I would say when you're thinking about just general eating strategies, you want to make sure that you are eating throughout the entire day to balance your blood sugar. Because what I find with some of my clients around 2 or 3 a.m., they will have an early, like a middle of the night awakening. And sometimes, not all the time, but some of the time, this is caused by a blood sugar crash. Because their blood sugar has not been balanced all day. And right. So they've got that blood sugar crash, which causes an adrenaline and cortisol spike. And so they wake up. So I would say first line of business would be to make sure that you are just eating to balance your blood sugar. And there's a lot that goes into that, but just kind of the, right. the bare bones version of that is having adequate protein at each right. meal, a healthy fat, and then a smaller amount of complex carbs. It's a pretty simple equation.
Yeah.
As far as eating at night, you want to have your dinner probably at least 3 hours before you go to bed. And you want to generally stay away from fatty, greasy, heavy foods.
Sugary foods.
Definitely. If you're going to have dessert, I would recommend having it during the day instead of the yeah. night. And yeah. I know this from personal experience using my Oura ring.
Yeah.
It's so sad because you just, you know, sometimes you go out to dinner and they bring out that dessert tray and you're like, ooh, that cake looks good.
I know. So how does your sleep makeover program work?
Yeah. So I work on a package basis. So people enroll with a 6-session package and we typically go through the sessions weekly. And it's a very customized package. So it's not a cookie cutter thing. Like on week 3, we do this. On week 4, we do this. I'm really meeting the client where she is. And sometimes she needs more coaching around nutrition or movement or stress management or just their various behavioral modifications that we go through. I use some practices that relate to CBTI, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. Some of those interventions are very, very helpful when you're dealing with someone who has insomnia. So we need to kind of pull that out of the bag of tricks. And they have access to me between sessions through an app. So if they need to check in and get a question answered, I'm there to support them. So it's a very supportive program. And 6 sessions.
Okay. Do you find some of the women that you help and their sleep improves, do they also anecdotally lose weight?
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up because what often happens when you get your sleep right is that your hormones get more in balance and you're actually able to set your body up to lose weight more efficiently. So anyone who's going on a weight loss journey or they're trying to get in shape, the first thing they really need to do is get their sleep dialed in.
I don't think people realize how important sleep is. It's the yeah. number one. That and controlling stress. And they, I believe, go yeah. hand in hand.
Absolutely.
What you're doing out there for women, it must be a project based out of love. I mean, you must be so fulfilled.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just having gone through these issues myself, it's just really nice to be able to help other women deal with what I've gone through. It's kind of that pain into purpose.
Exactly.
That a lot of people in the healing world go, you know, that's how they get started and that's how they continue to serve.
Absolutely. Where can my listeners find you, Morgan?
They can find me at my website, morganadamswellness.com. I am also pretty active on Instagram at morganadams.wellness. So I offer also a complimentary consultation if anyone wants to chat with me about their sleep issue or talk about the possibility of working together. They are more than welcome to reach out and book a consultation with me.
Fabulous. Well, this has been terrific. And you've given us lots of great tips. And I want to thank you very much for spending time with me today.
Well, I appreciate the invite, Susan. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.